KABC News, live and local at 11 o'clock. I'm Jeff Whittle. A 24-year-old man's undergoing a mental health evaluation after his alleged threat led to the partial closure of Cypress College in Orange County.
He was detained after his family raised concerns to Whittier Police.
Via electronic communications, he had indicated that he was distraught and that he was going to shoot up a school.
Police spokesman John Scroggins says he didn't specifically target Cypress College, but
our investigation basically led us to the fact that he last attended Cypress College, and out of caution, they decided to cancel class, at least for this morning.
No weapons were found at the man's home. Charges may still be filed after his mental health evaluation. In Whittier, James Rojas, KABC News.
Police are searching for the driver who struck a man in Arlington Heights and dragged him for several blocks. That victim was getting into his parked car at Washington Boulevard and 2nd Avenue. When he was hit, he got stuck in the wheel well until the hit-and-run driver turned into a cul-de-sac and then drove off. The victim dragged himself to a nearby home and asked for help. The suspect vehicle is a gray Nissan Versa with front-end damage. An LAPD officer is being credited with saving a baby's life by using CPR.
Police say the three-week-old infant had been slammed to the ground Saturday night during an argument between his parents in the Westlake District. Officers Ivan Ibarra and Alex Frazier say they found the little boy in his mother's arms when they got to the scene. Ibarra then reportedly convinced the mother in Spanish to let Frazier perform CPR. Frazier tells NBC4 News that it was amazing to see the not-breathing boy come back to life.
It just let me know that he was in there and there was hope.
Police say the child's mother suffered scratches in the fight and that the father was arrested for child abuse. Ken Jeffries, KABC News.
And it was a night of extreme high and extreme low for Best Actress winner Frances McDormand at the Oscars, as KABC contributor Jim Roop reports.
McDormand won the Oscar Sunday night for her lead role in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Okay.
But after the ceremony at the governor's ball, someone took it. Allegedly stole it right off a table when McDormand wasn't looking. TMZ posted a pic of the alleged thief holding the hardware. He was found, and the statue returned to McDormand, who then celebrated with an In-N-Out burger.
Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. Clippers rallied to beat the Brooklyn Nets 123-120. The Clips have now won 4 of 5. Lakers go for their 6th straight win tonight when the Purple and Gold host the Trailblazers. L.A. Kings off till Thursday when they host the Washington Capitals, while the Ducks host the Caps tomorrow night. Los Angeles FC beat Seattle 1-0 in their MLS debut. Galaxy topped Portland 2-1 in their season opener yesterday. Exhibition baseball, Dodgers blasted the Giants 9-3. Angels edged the Rockies 7-6. That's sports on the home of the L.A. Kings, 790 KABC. KABC News Time is 11:03 with dependable traffic when you need it most.
Yeah, beginning with the northbound 405 Lakewood. There's a crash clearing from lanes. Very heavy leaving the 605 and westbound 60. Get around Hacienda, left lane blocked with a crash here as well, with delays from Nogales. Northbound side of the 5 to the north 110. Ongoing road work backing up to the 10 here. Northbound 101 right around Glendale Boulevard. We had another earlier accident backing up to the 10. Southbound delays starting at Vermont. And also on the south 405 at Burbank, left lane blocked with an accident. Now delays Sherman Way over the hill to about Getty Center Drive. I'm Rhonda Kramer, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
KABC, SoCal weather, sunny skies today, highs mid-60s to the mid-70s at 66 in Walnut, 66 in Lake Forest, 63 in Northridge. Get news at the top of the hour, at the bottom, and when it breaks. I'm Jeff Whittle, Talk Radio 790 KABC News. Teens who vape are 3 times more likely to smoke cigarettes a year later. There's a lot the e-cig industry isn't telling us about vaping. Wake up to the dangers of kids using e-cigarettes at stillblowingsmoke.org. KABC News, sponsored by Still Blowing Smoke.org.
Radio is the first mass medium. But how does it work?
It's as marvelous and as simple as this.
Peter Tilden.
At 10!
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Hour number 2. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. And, of course, he'll beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. Get ready to call. I'm going to give you a chance to win tickets to see Morris Day and the Time at the Saban Theater. What a fun night that will be. Also, the Greg Kude Concert for the Arts. He was a producer who funded the arts. He passed away at age 72. And I guess they do this concert every year to help raise money for the charity. This is Rick Springfield, Terry Nunn from Berlin, Venice, and student musicians at the Barnum Hall at Santa Monica High School. This Saturday, I got tickets for that too. So get ready to call when I tell you to call. One of the big stories right now is our policy on trade. What is our policy on trade? What's the overall riding policy on trade? I know that the president feels that we're not treated fairly on trade and that the Chinese are targeting us on exports and imports, and there's a big imbalance. So we're talking about tariffs on steel and aluminum. The issue there is that they're intermediate goods, meaning that they're not the end all. Planes and beer cans are the end all. So producers who make those goods are going to probably pass the tariff along to consumers, meaning the prices will rise. Is this policy, is it slipshod? Does it make sense? I know that China, the steel from China, and they do produce a lot of steel that drives the price down, but we only import a small percentage of our steel from China. We get most of it from Canada, Brazil, Mexico, South Korea. So China only counts for about 2% of the total. And it appears that our allies that we do buy steel from want to retaliate, and they're sending messages back. The president is now saying that if we can renegotiate NAFTA to benefit the United States, he will drop the tariffs. So it's a bit confusing to get context on this. So joining us now is Andrew Zimbalist, professor of economics at Smith College, author of a ton of books, over 20 books, including Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble Behind Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing okay. So you heard me. I'm trying to figure out some context for everybody listening on this tariff thing on steel and aluminum, because some people start crying trade war. I don't know that it goes right to trade wars. However, if there's retaliation on the part of some of our allies, it tends to be that we retaliate, then they retaliate, and there is a fear that this could get ugly. What does it smell like and look like to you at this point?
Well, Peter, you'll have a very hard time finding any economist in the country, whether they're on the left wing or the right wing of the political spectrum, saying that this is a good idea. We have evolved over the decades a international trade system. The World Trade Organization has worked on the margin to make that system work better and better and make it more and more open. That is to say, have fewer and fewer tariffs and fewer non-tariff barriers to trade. The more we can trade with the rest of the world, and use the principle of comparative advantage, the better off we all are. And there's no question but that if Trump were to impose a 25% import tariff on steel and 10% on aluminum, that in the short run there would be some additional work for workers in those sectors. The number of people who would be benefiting, though, would be in the thousands, and the number of people who are potentially hurt by that would be in the millions. As you suggested in your introduction, if steel tariffs go up, it means steel prices go up. If steel prices go up, it means steel is an intermediate good. It means that construction prices go up. It means that all sorts of other goods go up. And the rest of us, the consumers in the country, would be hurt by that. And if we have to spend more money to build our homes or to build our cars or to build anything else, then we have less money to spend on other products. And so that begins to hurt production and employment in other sectors of the economy. As a general principle, it makes very, very little sense, even if there's not a retaliation by other countries. But we know that there will be retaliation, because there's no reason why another country should sit idly by and have its markets shut off at the whim of a particular president.
All right, so based on what you just laid out, if every economist lines up and says this is not a good idea, A, who do you think is advising the president that it is a good idea, number one? And number two, I notice what the president's doing here is he throws stuff out. I mean, just looking at how he dealt with guns in that bipartisan meeting that was on television, he threw out some things he wanted to see, and then he's more than willing the next day to reverse and say, after he meets with the NRA, to say, I want to do this now, I want to do that. Now, he's done it quite a few times. Is this a possibility that the just throwing out or floating out that I may do these tariffs, but now linking it to NAFTA and saying, you know what, if we can get a deal with NAFTA, because you're dealing with our allies at that point, some of the same countries, then I'd be willing to look at the tariffs and not impose them on steel and aluminum. Is that a strategy that could work?
I doubt it. Again, I don't think there are too many economists in this country who think that NAFTA has been bad for the United States. If it's bad for anybody, it's been bad for Mexico, but I don't think there are many who would say it's bad for any of the three countries. You're asking me to explain why Donald Trump does certain things, and to me, it's inscrutable. Other than this is the way he's conducted his business life, and he's gotten away with it all these years, and he doesn't know of any other way to approach being president. And he's turning off people in both parties, and also people in the White House. It doesn't make any sense for him to use this as a lever to change NAFTA, and it's not even clear what in NAFTA he wants to change. And I suspect that if somebody asked him, he wouldn't have very much of detail to say.
So what are the U.S. trading partners? How do they, if you're looking at this as an economist and saying, I don't get it, what does the European Union look like? Because I would assume that the way to get China's trade balance in line, more in line, the imbalance that's there now, is reach out to the EU, reach out to our allies and say, together, we should do something that can squeeze China and have the force behind us to make a dent in this. But that is not what we're doing. And am I right? That's a better way to do it?
Perhaps. I mean, yes, in general, behaving in a multilateral way makes much more sense than doing so in a unilateral way. But it's not clear that we have to worry a great deal about China's trade surplus. What they do with that trade surplus is they take the capital from it and they reinvest it in Europe and the United States and elsewhere around the world. And so we end up getting the capital back. The dollar hasn't moved dramatically in one direction or another. It hasn't created any disservice at all to our production in this country. So we have an international system where goods move around and also capital moves around. And if goods move in one direction, capital moves in the opposite direction. And since the dollar is still a world currency, we're not really hurt by this. At some point, you have to monitor the level of Chinese investments in different industries in this country. You don't want them to start having operating control or majority control in major companies. But if they're buying 10% here and 10% there, I don't see anything wrong with that.
What about China? Because you talked about investment, it is interesting to see the debt that China holds, the investments that they're making here in education, in courses that they're teaching, and funding, and also in real estate that they're buying. Are we limiting the amount of real estate that foreign countries are buying? Is there a cap?
Not that I know of. No. I mean, there might be in particular sectors that have security implications, but as a general matter, no, there isn't.
Does that concern you?
Well, as I say, I think that it should be monitored, and we don't want to be in a situation where they have operating control over important sectors of our economy. So as long as somebody is monitoring that, and I don't think they're anywhere near that point, but as long as it's being monitored, then I think we're okay.
I'm talking to Andrew Zimbalist, professor of economics at Smith College. So when the president makes a comment like he did last week that he's going to specifically puts amounts on what the tariffs are going to be, how does the European Union move forward? How do our allied countries move forward? What do they do to gird for that, to make sure, wow, it could happen, we want to be prepared if it does happen? Is there something that ramps up, or does everybody just play wait and see?
You mean that the people wait and see when Trump
wait and see when he actually does it?
Well, I think when he does it, I think there's going to be a very swift reaction. The European Union has its own issues right now. There are many centrifugal forces that are pushing those countries apart from each other. Immigration into the EU from Africa and from Syria is one of those big issues. I think that they need right now, they need something to pull them together. And Trump might be that force, might be the antagonistic force from the outside that makes the European countries say, hey, we can act in unity here. So I think there's going to be a very swift reaction. We've already seen President Trudeau in Canada stating that there would be a swift reaction. If they don't have a swift reaction, then they're going to expect Trump to do more and more, which would be destructive to the whole world economy.
I know Theresa May put in a call this weekend to talk to him. So if you're saying this again, and you're speaking for a lot of economists, how come Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, I saw him on the TV shows this weekend, he's responded saying everybody is an alarmist with this, that consumers wouldn't carry the burden of any new tariff. He says, oh, the sky's falling, sky's falling. He said the impact on the cost of the car will be 0.5% to 0.75%, depending on the price of the car itself. The impact on a can of beer will be a fraction of 1%. Beer sells for a buck a can. A Bumblebee tuna can. He's saying it's next to nothing. Is that accurate?
Well, I haven't gone through those figures. I doubt that the impacts are as small as he's suggesting they are. I don't know what motivates him to do that. I don't know what his portfolio looks like. I wouldn't be surprised, given that he's in the Trump cabinet, if there's some personal interest behind his comments. But look, even if it's the case that there's only a modest impact in the price of some goods and services, one of the things that will happen is that we'll have the retaliation that we face from other countries means that we'll be able to export less. And if we're exporting less, the companies that are exporting less will hire fewer workers. So there'll be an offset. Not only will we face higher prices, but there'll be fewer people employed in the rest of the economy. And whatever gains there are in employment in the in the steel and aluminum sectors, you'll see offset by larger losses in other sectors of the economy.
Well, look, he's got a lot of members, as you opened with, in his own party, who are saying, no, we should not do this. I see Paul Ryan is scared today that this could lead to a trade war, which would not be a good result at this point with the economy chugging along the way it is. So don't know if he's going to pull the trigger on this or not. Don't know what the time frame is on this. I know the NAFTA talks, I think they have 8 meetings lined up, and they completed their 7th meeting with not a lot of movement. Is there going to be change there? And by the way, as an overview, is America getting taken advantage of at every turn?
I don't think economists believe that to be the case. Now, every once in a while, you could point to incidents of dumping. You could point to incidents of the erection of non-tariff barriers to trade. What do I mean by that? A non-tariff barrier to trade might be, the Japanese used to do this a lot, and to some extent they still do, but they have certain rules about when a foreign car enters their country, it has to go to 6 or 7 stations to be checked to make sure that it's meeting all of the local specifications, that they have a long list of specifications for cars to drive on their streets. And so it has to go through 6 or 7 rounds of specifications. That's very expensive for that to happen. And even though they don't levy an explicit tariff on the importation of the car, the expense builds up, and so the price of the car goes much higher, and it becomes much harder to sell U.S. cars in Japan. So there are all sorts of things that have happened that have retarded the growth of free trade or more open trade around the world. But we've been moving in a direction that's constructive. We've been moving in a direction that identifies those countries which are dumping products or which are erecting non-tariff barriers and getting them to reduce them so that trade has flowed more readily around the world. And the United States, as the technologically most advanced country, or at least one of the most technologically advanced and developed countries in the world, we tend to have a comparative advantage in producing those goods that where the workers are most productive, where there's most income being generated. So we want the expansion of that world trading system.
Well, we will see what happens soon, probably sooner rather than later, if he's going to pull the trigger on that. Before I let you go, Andrew, however, we got the Olympics here. Yay! And I know the book, Circus Maximus, had you on, The Economic Gamble Behind Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup. If I'm right about this, the only Olympics where the city was not holding the bag, meaning they weren't responsible for overpayments, etc., was here in L.A. last time because we negotiated that. It was a last chance to have it here, and we said, no, we will not pay for overpayments. This time, it seems like every city is not making eye contact. It's like the teacher in a class. You don't want to look up because they may call on you. Other cities don't want it. No one makes money with this stuff. The infrastructure stuff is horrible. You got to move all the homeless people out of the way so nobody sees them for the optics. Right. And yes, we said yes. Why wouldn't we, if there's nowhere else for them to go, and they dissed us and gave us the second chance, why wouldn't we look at them and say, no, we're not going to pay for the overages. Make a better deal with us. Why did we rush into this deal?
I'm not sure that Mayor Garcetti or Casey Wasserman or anybody in LA 2028 was rushing into the deal. I think they looked at it very carefully. And to be frank about it, you have to look at the details to assess what the impact is going to be. LA made out well in 1984, in part because nobody else was bidding, and in part because they got the IOC to tell LA that they did not have to assume cost overruns.
Right.
But in fact, they didn't have cost overruns anyway. So at the end of the day, that particular concession wasn't all that important. What was important in L.A. in 1984 and what will be important in 2028 is that L.A. is the second largest city in the country and is an entertainment capital of the world, basically has all of the venues it needs. And so, and it has the infrastructure it needs. It has a modern and modernizing transportation infrastructure, and it has a modern communications infrastructure. It has a modern security infrastructure. The security, by the way, is going to be paid for almost entirely by the federal government in any event. So LA, when you have all of those things, and you don't have to, I think there's one venue they have to, it's a temporary venue they have to construct north of the city. Right. When you don't have to spend billions of dollars building infrastructure and billions of dollars building the venues, then the cost is actually pretty de minimis. It's pretty modest. And I think that the projections that they have done suggest an operating cost of somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 or $6 billion, and revenue will also be in that neighborhood. And so I think it's a reasonable investment. It's a reasonable undertaking for Los Angeles to have. It doesn't mean that it would be reasonable for any other city. One of the other things, of course, about Los Angeles is that, and this is somewhat ironic, because back in 1932, when Los Angeles first hosted the Games, they created the whole idea of an Olympic Village. They were the first city to have one.
Right.
Well, now Los Angeles is all set. They don't have to build an Olympic Village because they have they have UCLA dormitories and modern facilities there, and they also have USC dormitories for the Media Village. And they saved $3 billion right there.
So you think we got a shot? You think we got a shot at no overruns? Because every other Olympics except the 84 one had overruns.
Well, you know what? There's always a risk. Whenever you do anything that's long-term, there's a risk. And I'm not suggesting that there's going to be a great payoff for Los Angeles, but I do think that it looks like things are going to balance out. And hopefully it's not very disruptive, and that is something that the local citizens can enjoy.
Boy, I hope you're right. Andrew, always a pleasure having you on. The book, by the way, is Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble Behind Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup, and lots of other great books, too. Andrew Zimbalist, thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you again soon. Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
And I'll talk to you in just a moment, 800-222-5222, if you want to talk about the trade deal and the putting the tariffs on some products and creating a trade war. Also, the president was at the Gridiron Dinner. He told some jokes. One of them was about Melania maybe being the next to leave the White House. He actually told, I'm laughing at some of these jokes. I don't know who wrote them for him, but they're actually pretty funny. I'll run through them in a moment. Also, Chris Christie gives his take on Jeff Sessions staying or leaving. And Lindsey Graham talks about Jared Kushner and the peace process in the Middle East. I'll give you a hint on Lindsey Graham. He says not to worry about Jared Kushner not having a security clearance as far as the Middle East is concerned, because war is going to break out anyway. Now I'm relieved. Okay, great. 800-222-5222. Peter Tilden of 10 continues right after this.
KABC has dependable traffic when you need it the most, sponsored by Buffalo Wild Wings. Now just be aware that there is a police pursuit in the Palms area surface streets. This is a silver Ford Explorer. Possible burglary suspect now in a residential area in the Palms area. We're keeping an eye on this for you, so be extra careful. Northbound 405 Lakewood, they've been working out a crash here. Delays from the 605. Westbound side of the 60 at Hacienda clearing a crash. Backup is to Nogales. And northbound 101 Glendale, another accident clearing. And that has traffic busy here leaving the 10. Southbound lanes now heavily congested starting at Vermont. That continuing busy into the downtown Los Angeles area. Southbound side of the 405 freeway at Burbank Boulevard have been working on a crash here. All that backing up to Sherman Way and staying busy out about Getty Center Drive and southbound 215 MLK have been working on a crash here with delays now from the 91 interchange. Come to B-Dubs now for two cheeseburger or two chicken tender sliders with fries for just $5. This is how they do happy hour and late night. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings Beer Sports. I'm Rhonda Kramer, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues. You know what? I'm going to save these. I have the president's jokes from the Gridiron Dinner. I'm going to see what you think. Because I think these are pretty good. Somebody wrote them for him, and he did a good job delivering them. So I want to give him credit on that. Wow. Pretty good job doing that. Call now if you're the fifth caller at 800-222-5222. You can choose to go see either Mars Day and the Time at the Saban Theater March 25th or the Greg Coote Concert for the Arts featuring Rick Springfield, who looked great. He was just in here a week or two ago. Man, he has not aged. Rick Springfield, Terry Nunn from Berlin, Venice, and student musicians at the Barnum Hall at Santa Monica High School. It's this Saturday. So your choice of either concert, but call now, 800-222-5222. I will do the jokes from the Gridiron Dinner. There's the Mueller investigation looks like it has expanded yet again, and I'll tell you about that in a couple of moments. Also, some local stuff that I want to discuss with you. And the, one of them is the trashopoly thing that keeps going, but also the fact that City Council ignored a report on waste and flaws in this program, which allows veteran cops and firefighters to have their salaries and pensions simultaneously for up to 5 years. We heard what a mess that program turned out to be. What we're finding out now is they had an opportunity way back to either correct it or drop the drop program, and they didn't. So knowingly, they kept it going, and I will give you some of the specifics there and get your feedback. 800-222-5222, because here we are paying taxes for stuff. They never have enough money for stuff, and then they do things like this, waste money. And they're informed about it, and yet they keep doing it. 800-222-5222. Peter Till and the 10 continues right after the news.
KABC News is live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle, and as Rhonda Kramer mentioned in her most recent traffic report, LAPD officers are pursuing a possible burglary suspect who's driving a silver SUV in the Palms area. At last report, the chase was just south of the 10 Santa Monica Freeway and west of Overland Avenue, but no updates here in the last couple of minutes. A 24-year-old man's undergoing a mental health evaluation after his alleged threat led to the partial closure of Cypress College in Orange County this morning. He was detained after his family raised their concerns to Whittier police, and his electronic communications indicated he was distraught and going to shoot up a school. Police say the suspect did not specifically target Cypress College, but he last attended that school, so out of caution, college officials decided to cancel this morning's classes. No weapons were found at the man's home, but charges could be filed after his mental health evaluation. A woman was caught on video making racist remarks to a Long Beach family of Asian descent, and she's reportedly a faculty member at Golden West College in Huntington Beach. Tony Cow videotaped some of the comments the woman made to him, his wife, and baby daughter, and then he posted their encounter on Facebook.
Why? You told us to go back to our country.
You need to go back to your home country.
And what does that mean?
Hey,
well, we're born and raised in the United States, and you told me to go back to our country?
Cow says he does not want the woman fired from Golden West College. Her name has not been publicly released. It's not clear what her position is at the school either. President Trump says he's not backing down from his threat to slap tariffs on imported steel and aluminum unless he's able to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. Those comments during today's Oval Office meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
We are renegotiating NAFTA, as I said I would. And if we don't make a deal, I'll terminate NAFTA. But if I do make a deal which is fair to the workers and to the American people, that would be, I would imagine, one of the points that we'll negotiate, and will be tariffs on steel for Canada and for Mexico.
Talk Radio, 790 KABC Sports. Clippers rallied to beat Brooklyn 123-120 for their fourth win in five games. The Lakers put their five-game winning streak on the line tonight when they host Portland. The Ducks host Washington tomorrow night, and the L.A. Kings host the Capitals Thursday. Exhibition baseball, Dodgers trounce San Francisco 9-3, Angels nip Colorado 7-6. That's sports on the home of the L.A. Kings, 790 KABC. We'll have traffic, a market check, weather, and more Tilden at 10 next. KABC News Time, 11:33.
KABC has dependable traffic when you need it the most. Northbound side of the 5, connector road to the North 110. Ongoing road work here on that connector. Minutes, I was blocked a couple of minutes ago, busy from the 10. Northbound 101 at Glendale, clearing an accident from backing up to the 10. And southbound delays coming up from Vermont. West 134, I've got an accident here at Langersham in the carpool lane. And south 405 at Burbank Boulevard. That earlier crash is cleared, but Sherman Way to Getty is busy. And southbound 215 at Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, an accident in the clearing stages with delays here from the 91 interchange. I'm Rhonda Kramer, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Here's your 790 KABC market check, and it's a good day on Wall Street at the moment. The Dow up 260 points, the S&P 500 positive by 23, and the NASDAQ is above the line by 59. KABC SoCal weather, sunny today, highs mid-60s to the mid-70s. It'll be partly cloudy tomorrow, highs in the 70s in the L.A. Basin, could reach 80 in the valleys, and right now it is 67 degrees in downtown Los Angeles. Santa Ana checking in with 71 degrees, and at 66 in Van Nuys. And KABC weather is sponsored by Southern California Edison. Southern California Edison wants you to stay safe around electricity. If you see a downed wire, do not approach. Call 911. Stay aware, stay safe, and get news at the top of the hour, at the bottom, and when it breaks. I'm Jeff Whittle, Talk Radio 790 KABC News.
Operators are standing by.
Hello?
At 800-222-5222.
Go ahead. Say it.
790-KABC.
Talk Radio 790-KABC. Peter Tillman at 10 continues. Hour number two, 800-222-5222 is the phone number. If you'd like to talk about whatever's on your mind or what I'm talking about and what I'm going to be talking about right now, I promised you that I would give you jokes from the president's gridiron dinner, which is lots of journalists are there. It's like the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's a roast, a lot of laughs. But this president, you don't think of him as a joker. And he started talking about, my staff was concerned that I couldn't do self-deprecating humor. And I told them not to worry. Nobody does self-deprecating humor better than I do with his opening. So here's what he said. Here's some of the jokes. Let me test them out on you. On Attorney General Jeff Sessions' recusal from the Russia investigation, he said, I offered him a ride over here, and he recused himself. What are you going to do? But that's okay. Pretty funny. On Vice President Mike Pence's rule here, the other day we were in line shaking hands with men and women, and a woman came over to shake his hand, and he said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. My wife is not here. He's 25 years ahead of his time, folks. Boom. Let's see here. On White House departures, here's some of the... this is the one that you go, really? Did you really go there? He said, so many people have been leaving the White House. It's actually been really exciting and invigorating because you want new thought. So I like turnover. I like chaos. It really is good. Now, the question everyone keeps asking, who's going to be the next to leave? Steve Miller or Melania? Whoa, really? I can't believe he went there. I guess maybe their relationship is better than we thought, so he can joke about it, or maybe they don't talk anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter. He figures, you know what? I might as well get to laugh because I'm not seeing her naked until the next time Kohutek passes anyway because she's so mad at me. On Dreamers, we're talking about the Dreamers, and quite honestly, Democrats can fantasize all they want about winning in 2020. Those are the Dreamers. Whoa. On Kim Jong-un, I won't rule out direct talks with Kim Jong-un. I just won't. As far as the risk of dealing with a madman is concerned, that's his problem, not mine. It's his problem. Jared Kushner, before I get started, I wanted to apologize for arriving a little bit late. You know, we're late tonight because Jared cannot get through security. I'll tell you, he's a good guy, and he has suffered. He's a great guy. Whoa. Okay, so he's touching on all the jokes, on all the arenas. I'm sure you've seen, this is on Omarosa, I'm sure you've seen we're now riding very high in the polls, which is hard to believe considering I never get any good press. But I just hit 50 in the Rasmussen poll. A lot of people said I wouldn't be able to do so well after losing my so-called chief strategist. But somehow, we're still doing great without Omarosa. And on the opposition party, it might be hard for you to believe, but I do love gatherings like these. They give you a chance to socialize with members of the opposition party. It's very important. It's also great to see some Democrats here. So his own party is the opposition party. So not bad, and he got some laughs with that. Not laughing, however, is a new report out that says White House Chief of Staff John Kelly is unsure of how the president's relative turned advisor, Jared Kushner and Ivanka, spend their days. He basically said he's ticked that they come in last minute and try and alter the president's take on stuff and get him to switch his mind. And he actually said, what are they doing? What do they do all day? Who do they talk to? They just blow in here all of a sudden last minute after we've gotten something and try and influence them. So apparently he blames them for changing the president's mind at the last minute and questions exactly what they do all day. On top of that, Kelly and Kushner had this pre-existing beef over security clearances. And what Kelly has managed to do is get the press off his back. Remember all the negative press he had the last couple of weeks as far as Porter, and kind of now focus it on Kushner to the point that people are actually saying that the president is wondering how he could take the couple, really, out of the administration. It actually looks like it's hurting them about his son-in-law's ties to businesses. Remember, the son-in-law, he's got over $1 billion due on this investment that he made at the worst time ever to 666 Fifth Avenue in New York City. So they've got a debt due. And the question now is, did Jared meet with businesses that could loan him money after he was in the White House, which looks like it could be a conflict of interest. And the president not so happy about that. On top of that, Hope Hicks and he had that big falling out. And apparently she was overwhelmed seeing herself in the headlines with Rob Porter. They have broken up if you're worried about it. But she also had a problem with John Kelly and apparently had a deteriorating relationship with him. One person quoted that he's turned the Oval Office into a war zone. And he's really pulling rank on just about everybody, from Jared and Ivanka to now Hope, who has left the White House. And by the way, she testified, but she didn't say executive privilege, but she wouldn't answer a lot of questions. I thought you get subpoenaed if you won't answer questions if you're not doing executive privilege. Bannon was subpoenaed, but a lot of folks went in there and refused to testify and answer questions. If I did that, I'd probably be sitting in a jumpsuit somewhere. But somehow these folks, without invoking executive privilege, get out of there and don't have to answer these questions, unless these committees feel, you know what, doesn't matter. She's going to have to talk to Mueller anyway, and if there's something to be had, he's going to find it. What do you think? 800-222-5222? Peter Tillman 10 continues right after this.
KABC has dependable traffic when you need it most, sponsored by Smart and Final. And an update: police pursuit has come to a safe conclusion very close to the West Side Pavilion. This was the robbery suspect in a silver Ford Explorer and now in custody. Northbound side of the 5 connector road to the northbound 110, ongoing road work. Well, that connector has been blocked. That's now busy coming away from the 10. And also on the northbound 101, this is around Glendale Boulevard, and working with an accident that's backing up to the 10 southbound. Delays coming away from Vermont. West 134, Lancashire, they've moved this from lanes. It's an accident right shoulder, but a little bit slow from Pass Avenue. South 405 at Burbank, that crash has cleared. But delays now Sherman Way to Getty Center Drive, and 215 south, right at Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. There's a crash clearing, busy from the 91 interchange. Now get it all delivered to your home or business. Sit back, relax, and save, and let them do the shopping and deliver your groceries to your doorstep. Visit smartandfinal.com, and your first delivery is free. I'm Rhonda Kramer, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tillman 10 continues. Hour number two. So here's a question. 800-222-5222. The Los Angeles Times reported that the district attorney indicted this real estate developer, Samer Lung, and apparently he used straw men and he laundered illegal campaign contributions to the mayor and city council, right? So that he could get permits to build and expedite a zoning change so he could make $25 million in profit. We talked about that last week. So it's a huge windfall for him. Here's my question. If it was illegal and the district attorney determines it was illegal, what happens with all the money that they gave the politicians? Shouldn't they give it back? Will they give it back? The other thing is, if they keep doing this and finding out that other developers did the same thing, because I'm guessing where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, look around our city and look at all of the licenses and zoning that's been granted to these buildings, these atrocities that are going up that were never allowed to be built before, but they're going up now. If they used straw men, and this was a plan to launder illegal campaign contributions, and it happened with other developments, what about that money? And can you legally then reverse the zoning and say, you know what? Wait a minute. Let's revoke the zoning change because it was through bribes. It was done illegally. It shouldn't have been done. It was not to the benefit of us, the citizens here who pay our taxes. So what is that about? Also, the trash that they're taking in now, it's $400 million, almost double the previous cost of $225 million billed to customers for these waste haulers. What's going on there as far as that? Are they going to reverse that and give us money back now that we know that they were bought and sold around this initiative too? One of the leading proponents, by the way, apparently, according to Jack Humphrey, who I'm going to have on tomorrow, was a labor-controlled Los Angeles Alliance member who's now an operative in the mayor's office. So he's all for the trashopoly. And, of course, the city gets a kickback. They get $25 to $35 million for the increased fees that the garbage companies are charging. They go back into the general fund. So it's another backdoor tax. So big question. I'm going to try and get to the bottom of that tomorrow. If all this was done illegally, if the zoning was done illegally, can they reverse and revoke the zoning changes? Because we find out then they were not made in our best interest. They were not made in the best interest of the city. They were made through bribery to buy a vote. That should be reversed. We should not have to live with somebody paying a bribe to get a zoning change, which was illegal, and then have to stay with that zoning change for the rest of all times because they won't reverse it. All right, 800-222-5222 coming up. I'll be talking to Dr. Drew and Lawrence Savant here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Looking for some crosstalk, baby, believe me. I need crosstalk, baby.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden and wrapping up, making way for Dr. Drew and Lawrence Savant, who are on with us right now. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Lauren there?
I am.
There you are.
Good morning to you, or afternoon.
Peter, afternoon indeed over here. I'm in New York, Peter, and, oh man, already Peter's got to go out. Dude, Peter, I'm so excited about this interview you're going to do and what you're onto there with the way the city's behaving. That's something very wrong in our city. So
again, if you lied and you did some zoning things illegally,
whatever it is, there is something rotten in the state of
Denver. Try and find out tomorrow.
What it is.
Call for Dr. Drew now. We got to run 800-222-5222. Give him a call. See you later.